We're doing the book of Shemuel. We had learned about how there was this giant Philistine, Goliath, the son of Arpa, who was blaspheming and cursing the Hebrew camp. And David, who was a young man, went out and volunteered to take on the Philistine. He went out with 5 stones, threw his slingshot, and the stone, the angel of the stone met the angel of the metal in heaven and said, "Let me through." And the angel of the metal said, "Why?" And the angel of the stone said, "I'm doing God's work." And the angel of the metal said, "So am I." So the angel of the stone said, "Okay, well, I'll give you something for it." Till today, they've done circumcisions with stone. From today onward, they will do circumcisions with metal. Now, they were using stone knives, and now from that day onward, the custom evolved that we use metal knives. And that was agreed upon in heaven, and then the stone pierced through Goliath's kasadah, his helmet, and Goliath fell dead. And David went and cut off his head, and the Jews attacked. And when Shaul sees David walking out towards the Philistine, he says, "Who's that young man?" So Chazal have on tradition, he asked, from what family is he? If he's from the Davidic family of Peretz, then he will be king. I see the way he's planning things and the way he knows how to be a good politician, he's going to be king. If he's from Zerach, then he'll be big, but he won't be a king. And standing there was Doeg HaDomi. He's going to be David's arch enemy throughout his life. And Doeg says, "Before you ask me whether he's fit for king, why don't you ask me if he's fit for Jew? He comes from Ruth the Moabite." And then Avner says, "Wait, no, it says a male Ammoni or Moabi may not enter the Jewish people, a female may." So he said, "Would you say the same thing about a bastard, a mamzer?" So he said, "No, over here it says, we don't accept them because they didn't greet you with bread and water, and the women's job is to be in the tents. They don't have to go out and greet an enemy, a foreign nation, with bread and water. So we don't hold that against them." So Doeg said, "No, the women should have greeted the women, and the men should have greeted the men." Avner didn't have an answer, and then Shaul said, "Ah, so you don't know. So go find out. Who is that Alim?" Alim could mean a young man. Alim doesn't mean a virgin. When the prophet describes an Alma, a young girl who has the Messiah, he uses the word Alma. Alma means young person, doesn't mean virgin. The whole concept of a virginity is not there in the Pasuk. Over here, David is called, "Who is that Alim?" Alim could mean young man. Alim could mean Ne'elam, hidden. So, who is that young man? The halacha has been hidden from us. Is he a kosher Jew or not? And then he said, "Go out and figure it out. Go find out the halacha." But the simple pshat is that Shaul is losing it. And even though David has been playing the harp before him for ages, now that he sees him go out to war, he looks at him and he sees him in his armor. And now he says, "Who is that guy? I forgot who his father is. Who's his father? Whose son is he?" And when David comes back, so Avner brings him before Shaul. He's holding Goliath's head in his hand. And Shaul asks him, "Whose son are you, lad?" So he says, "I'm the son of your servant, Yishai Jesse from Beis Lechem." Yonasan falls in love with David. And Yonasan, even though he's the prince, and he's next in line to get the throne, he takes a great liking to David, and especially when he sees that David comes from an important family, the family of Yishai. So Shaul, from that day onward, tells David, "You're staying by me." Until then, when he was just playing the harp, so David would go home, and whenever he was needed, he was called to Shaul. Now Shaul tells him, "You stick around here." And Yonatan and David make a pact, and Yonatan gives David his royal coat and his armor, and he gives him these fantastic gifts, all his weapons, and Shaul sends him out, and David becomes a great general. And every time he goes out to war, he's very intelligent. At one point he tells Shaul, "You should know, when I go to war, I don't even sleep all night in the same place. We switch places as we sleep. We stop our sleep for after 2 or 3 hours and we move. So the enemy never knows from where we're going to attack the next morning. Because where they saw us camp the night before is not where they'll find us the next morning." Shaul is sly and very, very cunning. And he's very successful and everyone loves him. Now, when they came back from that war where David knocked down Goliath, so the girls went out singing and dancing, and they yelled, "Shaul killed thousands and David killed tens of thousands." And when Shaul heard that, Shaul said, he's got the tens of thousands, I got the thousands. The only thing left is that they should give him the throne. And from that day onward, Shaul has bitterness in his heart toward David. Notice what a little joke can do. People sang a song. And we're going to see a lot of people die because of this. From that day onward, the Navi says, Shaul was plotting to kill David. And because of all that plotting, the whole city of Nob is going to fall. A lot of Kohanim are going to die. The next morning, Shaul is at home, and he loses it. And when David is playing the harp, Shaul tries to hit him with the spear twice, and every time, David doesn't even notice it. He moves, and Shaul doesn't hit him. And when Shaul sees this, he sees that the same hashgacha that he should have had, that same close relationship with God, that Shaul, the king of Israel, should have had, has left him and rested upon David. Here, David didn't even know what he was doing, and twice, Shaul couldn't take him down. So Shaul sees that he's very upset at David, and he sees that God doesn't want him dead, so he puts him in charge of a battalion, and David goes out to war. Yes, sir?
I can understand how I can notice the first time, but the second time I didn't even notice.
Well, let's imagine like this. Shaul is pacing around the house, and everyone knows he's got problems now. So he's banging around things, and then he takes a spear and bangs it on the wall, and David just happens to lean forward and pull the harp. And David is playing the harp in all innocence, and he sees Shaul's banging around the house, and Shaul tries to cover up the fact that he tried to hit David with the spear, obviously by doing other weird things, which was pretty much the norm in the castle then. Everyone knew Shaul had a problem now. Shaul was being hit with depression. And it was expressing itself in front of everyone. The question is, how didn't the people demote him? I guess they couldn't. Or they didn't think it was that bad. They felt he was doing a good job as king. Now, wherever David went, he was successful. And Shaul saw that and he got scared. And everyone liked David. Shaul tells David, you know, my eldest daughter, Merav, I'll give you her as a wife. You just be a great warrior. Go fight the wars of Hashem. And Shaul said to himself, why should I kill him? Let him kill himself going out and trying to prove himself in the battles. And David says to Shaul, what am I? I'll be a son-in-law to the king. I'm such a ordinary family. And when the time came that Shaul had promised he would give Merav over to David, Merav thought better of it, and Merav accepted Kiddushin from Adriela Mecholati. She went off and married someone else. And her little sister, Michal, she liked David. And Shaul heard that his younger daughter, Michal, liked David. And he said, gee, that's nice. And he tells David, I'll give you my daughter, Michal. And he figured that, again, David will try to prove himself, and he'll end up dying at the hands of the Philistines. And Shaul tells him, you know, I didn't set this up. I couldn't give you the elder daughter. She chose to marry someone else. She didn't ask me. You'll marry my daughter Michal. Now Michal was a huge tzaddiket. Chazal tells us Michal would wear tefillin every day. And the rabbis didn't tell her anything about it. Ordinarily we say, for us men it's hard enough to keep our bodies pure when we wear tefillin. Women don't have to. Why should they get touch this difficult mitzvah? And we wouldn't recommend a woman do it. But Michal, she was high up there. The rabbis didn't tell her anything. She was a big tzaddikus. Very big tzaddikus. So Shaul tells the servants, tell David in secret that I really want him as a son-in-law, and everyone likes you and the servants like you. Go ahead, become the king's son-in-law. And when David hears this, he says, you think it's such a simple thing? What do I have? I know how to fight wars, but I'm not an honorable noble or anything. I don't have any big money. Why would the king want me? I'm a good soldier. So they tell Shaul that this is what David's saying. And Shaul says, go tell David that the king doesn't want a son-in-law who will bring in a ton of money. What he wants is someone who could show that he's getting rid of the enemy. Someone who could bring in 100 Philistine foreskins. And someone who could prove that he's taking revenge from the king's enemies. That's the type of person the king wants. And Shaul figured, if the Philistines hear that he's taking all foreskins off their dead, they'll go after him 10 times. and he won't make it back alive. And when David hears this, David says, great idea. He goes out with his men, and before the deadline, he comes in on these platters. He's got 200 foreskins. The king asked for 100, he brought back 200. They bring him before the king, and Shaul gives him his daughter Michal. Now, here David gave two things. Okay, it's a long conversation here. Maybe one day we'll discuss it. There was a machlokas here between David and Shaul, a machlokas that's quoted in the Talmud. Halachically, were these kiddushin valid or not? When one does a kiddushin and he tells a woman, here, I'll give you a dollar now and $1 million in the bank. I'll transfer the $1 million. Which one does she rely on? Which one is the kiddushin take effect in? Does the average girl think of the $1 million, or does she think of the dollar she's getting now? That was a machlokas David and Shaul, a machlokas in the Talmud. And that's why Shaul held that she wasn't really married to David, and that's why Shaul will later take her and marry her off to someone else. David held, and we rule in Allah like David, that she was legally married to him. Now, Shaul is getting more and more scared from David, and every time David comes back, and he's more successful, he's getting more famous and more honor. Shaul tells Yonasan, his son, and all the servants, we gotta kill David. And Yonasan tells David, you know, my father wants you dead, go hide tomorrow morning. And they go to a place called Evan Ha'azel. He says, that's where my father always goes out for his walks in the morning. I'll talk to him, and we'll see what my father says. Yonasan tells his father, Shaul, he says, why should you sin and hurt your servant David? He's done nothing wrong to you. Everything he's done is only in your benefit. And he risked his life. Remember now, David is Yonasan's brother-in-law. He's Shaul's son-in-law. And he's also the warrior who took down the Philistine, and Hashem gave great salvation to the Jewish people. When you saw it, you were also happy. Why should you sin and spill clean blood? Why should you kill David for nothing? And Shaul accepts it, and he promises, I will not kill him. So Yonasan calls David and tells him everything that happened, and everything's hunky-dory. It's like nothing ever happened. Again, there's war. Again, David is unusually successful. And when David returns, Shaul is sitting in his home, and David is playing the harp. Notice David's humility. He doesn't say, you know, I'm a top general now, I'm going to play the harp for the king. No, he finishes the war, he comes back, he's still playing the harp before the king. And this time Shaul takes the spear and tries to throw it through David. He figures, I can't kill him publicly, everyone likes him. So everyone will think I went insane and I killed him in one of my spells of insanity. And when Shaul tries to kill him, David runs, and this time he's seen what happened. And that night, he's home, and his wife Michal tells him, if you don't leave now, you're dead by tomorrow morning. Now Shaul sends his men to surround the house. Now they're standing by the front door. Shaul's men are there by the front door, and Michal lets David down out the back window. And he runs, and he goes to Shmuel. Michal takes, she had figurines. In those days it was common that they'd make mannequin of the husband. Whenever he wasn't around, if he was out at war for 2 months, she could look at that. Today we have pictures, they had mannequins then. So she had a mannequin of David standing there. I know that in Europe the custom was when a friend would leave, if he knew you wouldn't see one another for a while, he'd leave you with a picture of himself. Like the friend would give you a picture of himself. That was like a parting gift. That was an acceptable parting gift. So the wives would often have mannequins, pictures of their husbands. So she takes the mannequin, puts it in bed, and she takes a hide of a goat, and it was used as a flask, but it still had a lot of goat hair on it, and she puts it on top, like there's hair there, and she covers it all over the top, and the messengers come in, and she says, David's in bed sick. She wants to detain them as long as possible so David could get a head start. So Shaul sends his men. Now remember, they came in, the princess said, my husband's sick. They go back to Shaul. Shaul sends them back to David and says, bring him in bed to me. I want to see him in bed. We're killing him in bed. They bring him in bed, and they come, and they look in the bed, and it's not David. It's a mannequin. It's a goat hair. They ride back to Shaul. Now Shaul knows he's been tricked. But meanwhile, she's gained the precious few hours that David could run away. And Shaul calls in his daughter Michal and says, why'd you trick me like this? You sent away my enemy. And Michal said, Well, are you kidding me? You married me off to a gangster. He told me I'll kill you. What are they supposed to do? You married me off to this guy. Now, David ran away, and he comes to Shmuel, and
she
tells...
said that he would kill her?
Yeah. He said, are you kidding? David? He threatened me. He said, let me go or I'll have you dead. So, obviously, that story doesn't hold too much water, because that doesn't explain why she had to trick all those men, but women are good at that. They give you an answer that's not a whole answer, but it's insulting to your intelligence to start telling them, you know, that doesn't really answer all the questions. You ever notice they do that sometimes? Either you forget, or you're like, okay. So at any rate, Shaul doesn't belabor the point. David runs away, and he comes to Shmuel. So David's on the run, and now it's very clear that Shaul wants him dead. So the pasuk says, he and Shmuel went to Nayot. Nayot is like the word we had in this week's parasha, Anveyu. Nayot comes from the word Naveh. Naveh means home. Chazal say that night Shmuel and David sat and looked over the maps of Jerusalem to figure out what home, where does God want his home? Where should they build the temple? And here we see the greatness of David. You know, he's running for his life. He left his wife behind. He doesn't know what he's going to do. We're going to see that he's going to have no choice but to switch sides. He's going to go into Philistine territory. He doesn't see the future. And yet, he has one night with the prophet. What does he do with the prophet on that night? His focus is on Hashem. Where does Hashem want me to build the Beit HaMikdash? He knows Shmuel anointed him as king. One day he's going to lead these people. And his focus is not about his own honor. His focus is, I will be king, and I will be responsible to build the temple for Hashem. Where am I going to do that? So that night, when he's with Shmuel, he's sitting and looking over the maps. The Torah purposely conceals the exact location of the Temple Mount, so that the nations wouldn't be able to claim it's their holy site. They never did, until long after it became the Holy of Holies. And then that night, he and Shaul sat down and figured out where the Temple Mount was supposed to be. The Torah gives us the code. The Torah tells us how to figure it out, but the Torah doesn't say exactly where it's going to be. Shaul hears that David is up there with Shmuel. He sends messengers. The messengers come to Shmuel, and they start prophesizing. When a person's prophesizing, all he's interested in is God. He's not interested in anything physical. So they have no interest in touching David. They're interested in God. They're prophesizing. Shaul hears this. He sends a second group. Same thing happens. Send a third group. Same thing happens. Shmuel hears that a person can connect to Hashem up there. There's a prophecy abounding. He himself comes and he goes up to Shmuel and he merits to have prophecy. And he takes off his royal clothing. He wears simple clothing like everyone else. And he too prophesizes. And all day and all night, he's prophesizing, and when he's prophesizing, he's not interested in touching David. And David runs away. Yes, sir?
Wasn't David on the same level as a prophet?
David had prophecy. The rule is that prophets would get prophecy sometimes once in their life, sometimes twice in their life. Mm-hmm. A prophet didn't get prophecy whenever he wanted, other than Moshe Rabbeinu. On our Friday class, we're in the middle of learning the difference between Moshe's prophecy and all the other prophets, and that's going to be one of the differences. And Moshe could have prophecy whenever he wants. So David runs, and he comes to Yonasan, his brother-in-law, Shaul's son, and he says, what did I do? What is my sin? What have I done wrong? Why does your father want me dead? Yonasan says, God forbid, you're not going to die. My father doesn't do anything without talking to me first. Can't be. Why didn't he tell me he wants to kill you? David says, I swear, your father knew that we're good friends and that you like me, so he didn't want you to know, but I'm telling you, I swear by God and I swear by your life that I was a footstep away from death. And Yonasan says, so tell me, what do you want me to do? I'll do whatever you want. David says, tomorrow is Rosh Chodesh. And ordinarily on Rosh Chodesh, I join the king for a meal. Now you send me out, I'll hide in the field till the third night. Why the third night? So here we see that David knew there would be 2 days Rosh Chodesh that year. That's what it seems like. And if that's pshat in what's going on here, so then that indicates that they knew how long Rosh Chodesh would be, irrespective of the witnesses. So that goes back to the conversation we had in Parashas Bo, the Machlokas Rishonim, as to how the new month was instituted by the rabbis. Was it primarily calculation based or primarily witness based? Now your father, if he asks where I've been, you'll say, I asked you permission to go to my family, that we have family get together on this Rosh Chodesh every year. And if your father takes that okay and he says no problem, so then we know everything's okay. But if he gets all upset, then you'll also know that he wants me dead, it's over. And do me a favor, because we made a pact, you brought me in a pact with you. If I've done anything wrong, kill me. What do you have to trick me, bring me back to your father and have him kill me. Yonasan says, God forbid, don't worry. If I know anything bad, I'll tell you. David tells Yonasan, how will I know? If your father gets really upset, they'll for sure be following you. You're a prime suspect here. They know we're good friends. Yonasan says, let's go out to the field. Now that we're talking about not being followed, we never know who's listening here either. Chazal say, whenever you talk, you have to be prepared that people are listening. Unless you're standing in an open field where there's no one there, and you see there's no one there, so then you know no one's listening. In our day and age, so even then you don't know no one's listening. If you have a cell phone on you, the Shabbat could listen through the cell phone even when it's off. So you never know no one's listening. But at any rate, Yonasan tells David, I swear by Hashem, the God of Israel, that I will check out my father tomorrow and up to the third day, and when everything's good, I'll send and I'll call you. And if not, so then we're going to make the following sign. But first, I want you to promise me that you, I know you're going to be king, and you and your house will never do me or my family harm. And he makes David promise. And then he says, you go to that place, Evan Ezel, where we were back the first time I spoke to my father, and you hide to the west of the rock. And I will go and shoot my arrows as though I'm going hunting. And I will shoot the first arrow. And then I will shoot the second arrow. And when I shoot the second arrow, the lad will already go to fetch the first arrow. If I know you have to run, if I know you can come back, so I'll make sure to shoot the second arrow closer to me. And I'll tell the lad, come, bring them back in, they're closer. Come back in. And then that's a sign that you too should come back in. But if I know you have to run, and then I'll have to shoot the second arrow further than the first arrow, and so the third, so then I'll tell the lad, go beyond the first arrow. From afar I can see I shot the second arrow further. And go further, go further, I'll tell the lad. That will be a sign to you too that you should go further. And then that'll be the sign. No one has to know other than you and me. And what we promised today will remain between me and you. David goes to hide. The king sits for his feast. The first day of Rosh Chodesh, David doesn't show. And Shaul figures maybe he's impure. And it's not respectful to come to the meal when he is impure. The next day of Rosh Chodesh, David doesn't come. And Shaul asks Yonasan, why didn't he come today or yesterday? Yonasan says he asked permission to go to his family. They have a family get together this time of year. Every year he asked me permission. And I told him, go enjoy. And Shaul gets angry at Yonatan and he says, Ben Na'ava Tamaldut, he calls Yonasan. Your mother is sinful and rebellious and so are you. When all the girls were being taken for Shiduchim by the men of Benjamin, so Shaul was too modest. He wouldn't touch a girl, he wouldn't go after a girl. And Yonasan's mother went and grabbed Shaul. So Shaul, ever since then, that was like, what? It happens, yes. So Beisi Shaul held it against her till that day. And he says, don't you think I know that you prefer Ben Yishai? It's your shame and it's the shame of your mother. Because everyone's going to assume the only reason you want him to be king and not you is because you're an illegitimate child. Your mother must have gone with someone else. Otherwise, no other son, no legitimate son would let someone else take what's rightfully his. You're ashamed to yourself and you're ashamed to your mother. All the days that the son of Yishai is alive, your throne will not stand peacefully. You will not have confidence. And now go call him because he deserves to be killed. And Yonasan tells Shaul, why should he be killed? What's he done wrong? And Shaul picks up the spear, not to kill him, but to hit him. And Yonasan realizes that it's over. Yonasan leaves the table in anger. He doesn't eat on that day of Rosh Chodesh. And he's upset over what's with David. And he's also been shamed by his father. His father called him a name. His father hit him in front of everyone. The next morning, he goes out to the field. He hasn't eaten by choice. David's had 3 days without food, and not by choice, because he has to stay in hiding. So he goes out, and he makes a fatal error. He doesn't bring along a snack. He doesn't bring along any food to give David. A person should always remember, Gdola legima. Giving someone to eat or drink is so great that we have families that joined the Jewish people because they offered a drink, and families that were distanced because they did not offer a drink. The family of Yisro became part of the Jewish people because when Moshe was on the run, so they offered him a drink. They invited him in and they gave him something to eat and drink. And ultimately that led to their being a part of the Jewish people. The Moabites and the Ammonites, we don't accept them into the Jewish people because they boycotted us. They wouldn't offer us a drink. They wouldn't offer us for pay. And Yonasan makes this fatal error. He doesn't bring David anything to eat or drink. He shoots his arrows, he shoots the second one more distant, and the third one even more, and he tells the lad, go, it's even further, the lad runs and runs, and he brings the arrows, and Yonasan gives him his bows and arrows, and the lad goes back home. They wait until the coast is clear, no one's around. And now when the coast is clear and it's silent, David comes out from hiding. Yonasan sees him, they hug. David approaches Yonatan and he bows 3 times. He is talking to a prince. They kiss, they hug, they weep. And Yonatan tells David, go in peace. Remember our promise. Hashem should be between you and me and our children forever. Yonatan comes back to the city. David goes to Nov. Nov is where the Aron has been established ever since Shiloh was destroyed. And the Kohen Gadol Achimelech goes out to greet him. Yes, sir. Oh no, I did explain it. They didn't want anyone to see. They didn't want the lad to see. They didn't know if they'd have a chance to talk. It happened to be that after the lad left, they waited a period and the coast became clear. Originally, they didn't know if they'd have an opportunity to talk. And they knew Yonasan might be followed. So they waited. And when the lad left, and they saw, that's what I meant when I said the coast was clear. That originally they didn't know if they'd have an opportunity to talk. And that's why they made up this deal. That if the coast doesn't become clear, at least David will have gotten the message. Yonasan didn't even know where David was hiding. There's also the element here where Yonasan knows that David can't fully trust him. And David says it clearly. David says, if you want me dead, do me a favor. Kill me, but don't trick me. And Yonasan says, no, of course not. But at the same time, David doesn't tell Yonasan where he's hiding. So Yonasan has to respect that. And that's why Yonasan comes out to the field and he shoots the arrows and David listens to the message. And when he gets the message that says, you better run, David, then he knows that Yonasan is obviously on his side. And only after that, when the coast is finally clear, David comes out. But Yonasan didn't know which message he would give. He didn't know if David would buy his message. And he didn't know if David would reveal his hiding place to him. And he also didn't know if David... Now this part is my own... This part about Yonasan not knowing where, how much David trusted him. I didn't see anyone that says it overtly, but that's what the psukim seem to indicate to me. But what the commentaries do say is that they didn't know if the coast would be clear. They didn't know if they'd have any time in private over there where they'd be able to talk.
Maybe that's why you bring food.
I don't think it's a good enough excuse. He could have brought food in his backpack and seen. Something. At this point, David is on the verge of dying of hunger. He's had 3 days. He's probably eaten some berries or something, but he's got nothing really. And David is literally on the verge of dying of hunger. And he comes to the city, and when a chief general like David comes to the city, so the Kohen Gadol Achimelech comes out to greet him and says, what's wrong? How come you're all alone? Where are all of your men? And David says, the king sent me urgently on a mission, and he said, no one's allowed to know that I sent you, and I hid the lad somewhere, and no one could know that I'm on my way to a special mission, that's why I came to the city alone. tell me what food you got with you. And Achimelech says, I don't have any bread. The only thing I have right now here is the holy bread that was just removed from the table, from the lechem haponim. And just tell me, are the lads clean? Have they been away from their wives? You know, if they've been with their wives, they're impure. They shouldn't be eating this bread. And David says, yeah, it's been 3 days. We haven't been at home. And when we left, all the lads left in there. They were in a holy state. Don't worry about it. And anyways, you remove the bread from before Hashem. It's not as holy as if I take the bread. If I needed to, I'll tell you the truth. We're on such an urgent mission, I would take the bread from before the lechem haponim, from before God. Because right now, it's critical that we have the bread. But the bread you're offering me anyways is no longer before Hashem. It's no problem. So the Kohen gives it to him, and there was no other bread to give him. So the truth is, the reason it was permissible for David, even though it's biblically prohibited, it's only permissible for Kohanim, was because David was on the verge of death. David had 3 days without food, and he knew that he had only minutes, maybe an hour or two left to live if he doesn't eat something. So he gives it to David. And one of David's servants, the Pasuk calls him Abir Haroim, the chief shepherd. We have on tradition that Abir Haroim means he was the chief of the Jewish court. Like a shepherd watches his flock. The leader of the Jewish people watches over them. And Doeg, that same nemesis of David, is there. He's come to Nov to pray, to have some itbodedut. You guys know what that is, right? Long before Breslov, there was itbodedut. And that's what Doeg is doing in Nov. He's talking to God. And he sees what happens. And David sees him, and he sees David. But he doesn't know what's happened. He doesn't know what's transpired back in Shaul's home. But he listens to the conversation, and David says to Achimelech, do you have a spear? Do you have a sword? I didn't have a chance to take any of my weapons when I ran. The king's matter was urgent. The Kohen says, the only thing I have here is Goliath's sword that you brought after the day you defeated him. David says, give it to me. It's the best sword I've seen. And David asks the Kohen, he wants to ask God a few questions, and being that he's a leader of the Jewish people, and technically he's also been anointed king, he's allowed to ask the Urim V'Tumim. David runs, and he goes to Achish, the Philistine king of Gat. And David had always asked about different creations God made. At one point, David asked God, why did you create a person that's insane? And God said to him, you'll still see that there's a need for that too in the world. At one point, David said, every creature you created, God, I understand more or less why it's there. But what's the purpose of the spider? The spider makes webs, gets people's homes dirty, makes webs, and the other flies get tangled in its web and it kills them. What's the purpose of the spider? And God said, you'll still see, you'll still need that spider. So David had wondered why God made people insane. And God said, you'll see, there's a need for insanity in the world too. And he comes to Achish. And Achish's servants tell him, that's David, king of the land. You know, when they sing songs in Israel, they say, David killed tens of thousands. Saul king killed thousands, and David killed tens of thousands of Philistines. And David hears this, and he's scared. And so when he's standing in front of Achish, and Achish comes to see who this man David is, he starts letting his saliva droop down his beard, and he starts acting like he's insane, and he rubs against the wall, and he's standing there, and he's doing everything like the person he was insane. And that's what we say in the chapter of Tehillim. We say it every Shabbos. B'shanoto et ta'amo lifnei Avimelech. When he changed his nature, his understanding before Avimelech, the reason why Achish is called Avimelech is because Avimelech is a generic name for Philistine kings. Just like Pharaoh is the generic name for Egyptian kings. So, Vaygalsheu, and Avimelech, Achish, chased him away, Vayelech, and he kept coming back and going forward, and he played it really well, like he was insane. So Achish looks at him and says, that's the man you're bringing me? Now Achish had a problem. His wife and his daughter had gone mad on him. And every time he'd come home at night, they'd drive him crazy, because they were crazy. Literally. And so when David does this act in front of Achish, Achish looks at him, at them, and says, is there a shortage of people crazy in this castle? That's why you brought him here? I'm not letting him into my castle. And they send him out. David rushes over to the cave of Adullam, and his family has heard that he's on the run, and they are concerned that Shaul might come and kill them. So his father and all his brothers, even though he's the little one, they know their lives are at risk, and they come to him. And any person who couldn't handle his debt or was embittered, or any person that had trouble with life, knew that he could join David's troops. And they went out to David and they joined him, and David started having a battalion again. He has his 400 men. Not the same type of troops he had when he was King Saul's general. And David goes to the Moabite king. And he tells him, do me a favor, I have to see what God has in mind for me. Let my family stay with you till I see where things are headed. And the Moabite king says, no problem. And so long as David is nearby in what's called Mitsuda, everything's okay. Then David is told by the prophet, go out to the forest called Ya'ar Chores. And David does. And as soon as David distances himself from Moabite territory, we have on tradition, the Moabite king went on to kill his whole family. Father, mother, sister, brother, all his family was killed. So now David was worried they might be killed if he leaves them in Israel. He took them out to Chutz La'aretz, to the Moabite king, hoping that their things would go well for them. And they were all killed. There was the Ammonite king, Nahash. He was there in the castle at the time, and he saved one of the family. One of David's relatives were saved by Nahash. And that's why when Nahash passes away, David is going to send, we're going to learn that probably next week, David is going to send consolation to Nahash's son. Why does David have to comfort a non-Jewish king? He says, I owe him one. His father saved my one relative. Everyone else was murdered by the Moabite king. So now David is really alone in the world. He has a relative. He has his father-in-law, Saul, who wants him dead. And Shaul hears that David's been sighted. So David, Shaul is sitting with all his servants around him, and he says, listen here, you from the tribe of Benjamin. His servants he took from his own tribe. And he says, do you guys really think David has enough money to give you all fields and vineyards and make you all generals in his battalion? Where is he going to have enough money to pay you all off that you're all in cahoots with him? You've all obviously been in cahoots with him because none of you thought it was fit to tell me that David made a pact with my son. No one here thought they should tell me that my son helped my enemy prepare his ambush on me. One of the people who wasn't even standing there, he was just nearby, was Doeg. The same Doeg who was the Av Bezdin, Abir HaRoim, the same Doeg who questioned whether David had any legitimacy as a Jew, the same Doeg who was present when David went before Achimelech. And he said, I saw the son of Yishai. I saw him come to Nov, to the Kohen Gadol, to Achimelech. And I saw the Kohen Gadol treated him like a king. Ordinarily, a king is allowed to ask God through the Kohen Gadol what he should do. Now, technically, that's not true. Technically, anyone that's a major public servant may ask through the Kohen Gadol what should be done. And David would frequently ask through the Kohen Gadol what should be done, as his position of chief general entitled him to do. But that's not how Doeg wants to present it. Doeg says, Lashon Hara. And Doeg says, Achimelech gave him food, and Achimelech gave him the sword of Goliath, the Philistine. And now that Doeg says all of this, Shaul sends to call in Achimelech and bring in all his family. They all come before Shaul. Shaul says, listen here, son of Achituv. Achimelech sees something's afoot. He says, whatever you want, my master. He says, why did you and the son of Yishai plot against me? Why did you give him bread? Why did you give him a sword? Why did you give him the honor of asking God on his behalf? Why did you help him come up against me and ambush me? And Achimelech says, but who was more faithful to you than David? And you know what? He's your son-in-law. I didn't know. He's always doing whatever you want. He's the most honored one within your home. Is today the first day I asked on his behalf? God forbid. Don't assume I've done something wrong. Don't blame me and my family. I didn't know there was anything afoot between you and your son-in-law. And Shaul refuses to listen. He says, you will die, you and all of your family. And then he tells his lads, he says, kill them, because they've joined David's forces. His two top generals, Avner and Amasa ben Yeser, he tells them, kill the Kohanim. They knew that David was on the run. They didn't see fit to tell me, and they all deserve to be killed. Avner ben Ner and Amasa ben Yeser stand and look at David and look at the Kohanim and look back. I'm sorry, they look at Shaul, they look at the Kohanim, they look back at Shaul, and they say, no. Shaul says, what do you mean? They say, we're not going to kill him. Shaul says, it says, when our first king Yoshua was appointed, Kolish asher yamre et picha, anyone that rebels against what you say and doesn't listen to you will be killed. They said to him, right, and there's a continuation to the Pasuk. The Pasuk concludes and says, Rak, but there is an exception. Chazak ve'ematz, on the condition that you're strong in the Torah. And what you're saying now is not Torah. You want us to kill the Kohanim, in this we don't have to listen to you. What you're saying is not with the Torah. So they refuse. Shaul turns to Doeg. Doeg is the head of the court. And over here, the Navi writes his name is Doeg, like Dag, the fisher. He says, you know how you catch a fish? You put in a worm on a hook, and then it's caught in its mouth. Now you, Doeg, have been caught by your mouth. You're the one that testified that they were in cahoots with David. You killed the Kohanim. And Doeg draws his sword and kills 85 top Kohanim on the spot. Goes around and kills them all. And then he goes to Nov, the city of Kohanim, and murders the whole city. Man, woman, child. Everyone's killed. And then he kills the ox and the donkeys. And a heavenly voice came out and said, Shaul, you were such a pious, overly pious man. When it came to the Amaleki, I sent you to Amalek and I told you, destroy Amalek to the core. And then, no, you can't kill the animals. You can't kill innocents, right? Then you had an issue. And then I said, Al tehi tzadik obed, don't be so righteous. Don't think you're kinder than God. And now the heavenly voice said, Ve'al tirshah obed, and don't be overly wicked. People who go to the extreme, who don't maintain the balanced line, the same people who are going to fight for human rights, but in an immoral way, will ultimately also fight to see other human rights trampled. You have to fight for human rights when it's the right way, in accordance with the Torah. But a person who goes off to the right will also find himself going off to the left. There's no more moral way of life than the way of the Torah. And the second Shaul chose to veer off that path, so one time he veered off the path and thought he was extra righteous and would not kill the animals, and then the next time he veered off the path and he killed innocent men, women, and children. One son made it away, Evyasar. And this is the sin of Shaul. Shaul erred and lost the throne for it. Everything else that Shaul is going to do now, we don't blame him for. For everything else he does, we attribute his bad spirit. But when the time will come that Shaul will die, our sages will attribute it to this, to the murder of the city of Nov. Yes, sir. You want something, Yitzhak?
Yeah, I forgot the...
Okay. Evyasar runs away to David and tells him what happened. And David tells of Yasser, I knew on that day that Doeg was there, and he'll go tell Shaul, I'm the cause of the death of the city of Nov, and there's an element of truth to that. There is an area where in heavens David was also held accountable for what happened there. David tells him, stay with me, because I'll protect you, whoever's, we both have the same guy trying to kill us. David tells him that, David is told that the Philistines are attacking the city of Keilah, and they're destroying the silos, the granaries. They're coming and plundering them. And David asks Hashem, should I go and attack them? And God tells David, go. Now David has a coin with him. Through the coin he could ask Hashem. David's men tell him, if we're here in friendly territory in the tribe of Judah, we're scared for our lives. We'll go out to Keilah and fight off the Philistines. So David asks Hashem a second time, and Hashem says, go, I will let you win. And David takes his men. He didn't need to ask a second time. They needed the second time. So he takes his men, and he saves the people of Keilah, and he defeats the Philistines. Now, David just risked his life and his men's life to save the people of Keilah. The people of Keilah have fortification around their city. And when Shaul hears that David came to Keilah, he says, God gave him into my hands. Because he's going to rely on the fortification of the city. I'll surround the city, and the people of the city won't want to die, so they'll give him over to me. So Shaul gets his men ready for war. David knew that Shaul was preparing to attack him. So he asks God, I heard Shaul's coming to Keilah to destroy the city because of me. Will the people of Keilah give me over to him? And will Shaul really come down here as I've heard? And God answers only one question at a time. God says, Shaul will come. So David asks a second time, will they give me over into Shaul's hands? And God says, they will. Now it is unclear whether they would be right or wrong for giving them over. There is halacha that says that if a city is surrounded and the enemy wants only one person, so if that person deserves the death penalty, you can give him over and you don't have to have the whole city die. If he doesn't deserve the death penalty, so why should you give him over? Just because they asked for him. So here it's unclear whether the Jewish people felt David legitimately deserved the death penalty or not. Would they give him over because they weren't men enough to stand up for the guy who just saved their lives? Or would they give him over because halachically they were right? They didn't all have to die in order to protect David. So David takes his 600 men and he runs away from Keilah. And when Shaul hears that he's left, so Shaul goes back home. David goes to the desert of Ziph. And every time Shaul tries to get him, God doesn't let that happen. Yonasan leaves his father, goes out to David, and strengthens his hand, strengthens his faith. He comes and he gives him a pep talk. He says, believe in Hashem. Things are going to go good for you. Don't worry, my father will not get you ultimately. You will be king. I'll be second in command under you, and my father knows that too. And again, they make a pact. And here we see a very important point. Sometimes we think if a guy is strong in his emunah and he seems to be standing up to all his tests perfectly fine, so no, good for him, he's doing good. It's a wrong attitude. We don't have to wait till a guy falls on his face to pick him up. Every guy needs chizuk. Every person, even David and Chazal say, even Avraham Avinu, every person needs people to strengthen them, even when they're doing what's right. We don't have to wait for a person to falter and then see, well, can I fix it up? If you could strengthen someone, if you could say positive words, you do. And that's what Yonatan did. David is going to have the fight of his life now because the people of Ziph come to Shaul and they say, David's hanging around our territory. Come, we'll help you get him. And David doesn't know it, but they're going to spy for Shaul and they're going to verify exactly where David goes. And Shaul tells them, you know, I know him. He told me. He never spends one night. He doesn't spend the whole night in one place. You got to follow him and make sure you know all his hideouts because he's unusually cunning. And this is where we'll have to pick up Ezachem next week. We're a little bit out of time. We have 10 minutes left for our Binyan and Bayit class.